This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of The Zioli Show. Do us a favor, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and tell your friends. Come on, I got kids to feed. College isn't going to pay for itself, you know? Thanks for listening.
Rich Zioli Show Podcast.
Noah Rothman, welcome to Philadelphia. How are you?
Hi, Rich. I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. The book is called Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. And Noah Rothman is here today. Very excited about this book. As you know, the social justice nonsense is amazing and never seems to end here. And you write here, why ripping the blindfold off Lady Justice is a threat to America. So glad you made time today. Tell me what gave you the motivation to write this book.
Sure. Well, like a lot of conservative opinion writers, I spend a fair amount of time talking about the pernicious effects of identity politics, mostly on the left, but on the right as well. And it wasn't until I took a government-sponsored junket to Ukraine that I was really treated to what looks to me like identity politics in practice, and it was chilling. We were seated across from the country's chief prosecutor, who was explaining to us why this government, the pro-Western government, we were pointedly reminded, had no intention of prosecuting the individual who were on their side executing violence in the Maidan revolution that overthrew the pro-Russian regime. And this was very troubling to me. It was no kind of justice that I was familiar with. This looked a lot more like revenge. And it struck me that this is sort of where we are going in this country, in the way in which social justice activism is progressing towards this sort of tribal identity and a vengeful collective political sense of retribution that is masquerading as justice. This is identity politics in practice, sort of an alternative theory of societal organization, one that I think is antithetical to how the United States is founded and operates today, and I think it's quite dangerous and needs to be stopped.
I agree with you, but let's start with the basic definition of how do we define social justice? And I'll ask you this, too. And then how would you define a social justice warrior?
The problem is that there is no real universal definition for this thing. Even among its activists, it sort of means a variety of anodyne, unobjectionable statements of purpose that are really amount to nostrums more than a definition, which is why a lot of Americans probably think that there's nothing entirely objectionable at social justice. Maybe it's just a way for us to think about fairness and justice in a society and addressing historical grievances. And what could be more American than that? The problem is that in the hands of its activist class, it has become something very different. It has become the antithesis of the kind of blind, objective justice that we see meted out in a courtroom. And in practice, it prescribes discrimination, prejudice, and radicalism. And it saps its adherence of agency and distorts what they think politics in this country can really achieve. When I talk to social justice activists on the left, who they advocate certain things like that I think are really objectionable and antithetical to the American mission, like the notion that meritocracy is a myth, that your accidents of birth put you on a course in life that is in many ways predestined, that separatism, racial, demographic, or otherwise, is good because it prevents social discomfort, and that colorblindness in institutions is naive at best and probably dangerous. And when I talk to social justice activists on the left and I say, you know, white supremacists believe all this stuff too, that you're on the same page here, they sort of look at you funny, like they've never thought of it that way. These are obstacles to addressing real institutional discrimination and racial prejudice in this country, which this book addresses and says, you know, is real and valid and genuine, but the prescriptions that they've devised to address this sort of stuff are completely unproductive at best and probably obstacles to creating real racial parity. I don't talk about social justice warriors in this book because that's a pejorative. My objection here isn't to identify people and shame them. My objective here is to convince people of the course on that they are on is an obstacle to achieving what the two of us really want, which is real racial comedy and progress in this country. But the kind of stuff that you are addressing here and adopting in these social justice activists' prescriptions and philosophy are an obstacle to achieving that.
The book is called Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. Noah Rothman joins me. He is the author of this book, which you can get everywhere books are sold. Noah, let me ask you this question. I mean, you graduated from Drew University And so you're a local guy, you know, local this area. Have you noticed a lot of colleges now are doing more things? For example, they'll have the, you know, the black only student union or this group is, you know, in other words, they're segregating as a response to what they are perceived as hurts against their own group. I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about? And have you seen that firsthand?
Well, sort of, but in a little bit more circumspect fashion. I don't think there's a real problem with steeping yourself in a lifestyle that complements your field of study, and that was the norm when I was on campus. It's the norm today, but something different is happening over the past, maybe earlier this decade, but around 2012, 2013, and it's intensifying now, where you have administrators, non-faculty administrators, and faculty alike, who are saying that the kind of separatism that you're describing expands well beyond a field of study. It's much more about lifestyle, and as I said earlier, what some administrators call preventing uncomfortable learning in social situations as opposed to in class situations. The idea there being that you can be discomfited by having an exchange with or experience with or even contact with people who do not share your demographic traits. I don't know what else to describe that beyond segregation. It's of a benign sort, so you could call it benign ghettoization, and I certainly do, and that frustrates my critics to no end. But it is nevertheless that they're a pernicious sort of idea about what contact with people who don't look like you affects you personally, physically, psychically. That to me is a dangerous way of thinking.
Well, also not just, but also hearing opinions that you don't like, right? But opinions that they consider to be hurtful or that trigger you or positions that might make you feel as if you're a victim. And so in that sense, you're also experiencing censorship in a lot of places where they won't debate abortion, for example, because somebody who may have had an abortion might feel victimized by the conversation or something like that.
Yeah, and these ideas are certainly not exclusive to campus, although that's where they probably incubated, but they're migrating out from campus into general society broadly. And the book demonstrates how social justice diktats have become part of the daily conversation. It's how businesses organize themselves. It's how employees interrelate with employers. It's remaking our politics, and it's certainly reshaped academia. And it, as you say, one of the campus concepts that is migrating off campus is sort of this notion that discomforting speech or challenging ideas constitutes actual physical harm, can cause physical trauma. And it's not a cognitive leap for you to go from that point of view to think that speech is violence, to justify committing violence in order to prevent speech. It's practically self-defense. And so we have seen an uptick in violence, street violence, committed by people on the right and the left who are identitarians first, who believe in identity first and not ideas and the transcendent power of egalitarian thought. And I think that's a trend. I think this is part of what social justice activism in the real world looks like now, beyond the, you know, the unobjectionable anodyne ideas about fairness and equality. In practice, this is a philosophy that has become pretty dangerous.
Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America by Noah Rothman. This book's got a lot of people talking. Let me just ask you this question before I let you go, Noah. You talk about how this concept of social justice is not just merely on the left. I mean, we talk about it on the left a lot, I think.
Yeah.
It seems to be, in my opinion, at least, where it's very rampant. But you also mention some examples on the right. Let's talk about those as well.
Yeah, so this idea has evolved into an idea that's hostile to American concepts of egalitarian fairness, meritocracy, judging individuals by individual actions. It is very tribal and collectivist, and appeals to that sort of very fundamental human need. And so it has become attractive not just to the left, but also to the right, the identitarian right, the alt-right, the nationalist wing of the Republican Party has become attracted to these ideas as well. And the book demonstrates in the way in which there is a foundational philosophical ethos that mirrors the social justice activists on the left in a way that I don't even think they notice. Because of the narcissism of small differences, the two of them are at each other's throats, but they are more alike in ways that I think are very core than they are dissimilar. These are very small fringe movements on the right, and social justice is primarily a phenomenon of the left, but it's not exclusively so. And Republicans would do well to acknowledge the seductive power of these ideas that prescribe grievance politics, a paralyzing sense of victimization, and the notion that you are besieged by your fellow countrymen and have been that which is yours has been stolen from you, and you must appeal to a strong hand in order to restore it. These are the prescriptions of the social justice left, and they are being mirrored by people on the right in ways that I think are deleterious. There are shared objectives. As people on the right, we have certain policy prescriptions we want to see enacted, and we want to get a critical mass of support for those policy preferences. And so it's incumbent on us to look at the members of our own side who are attracted to these ideas and say, you know, wait a minute, this is an obstacle to doing getting done what we want to get done, and you're being seduced by a paralyzing victimhood narrative that is very similar to the kind of people and ideas that you oppose.
Noah Rothman, Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. Thanks for writing such a great book, and we'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Rizzioli 3-6, Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.